This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia. Good morning, I'm Liam Fox. Coming up, the Fiji government says the economy has never been in better shape. But what do ordinary Fijians think? The Vice President of Kiribati has reportedly been sacked, but there's been no official word from the government. And hopes a massive resort and casino development will transform Western Province in Solomon Islands.
If this investment does go ahead, it will set a very positive signal in as far as tourism, large-scale tourism investment in the Western Province.
But first, a researcher investigating hate speech online says Facebook is not doing a good job of monitoring content in the Pacific. It follows reports that the social media company is working with the Vanuatu government to identify and delete fake accounts used by its citizens. For some, the move signals a greater commitment by Facebook to work in the region and crack down on violence linked to the site, but others say Facebook should instead incorporate local perspectives to better serve its Pacific users. Reporter Priyanka Srinivasan has the story.
In the real world, violence and hate speech can often be easy to spot, police and prosecute. But online, violence can be more difficult to identify. People sometimes use fake names on social media to hide who they are and where they're from. And those who monitor online content may not be able to understand cultural differences that make hate speech in San Francisco look different from hate speech in Suva. This is why Facebook is teaming up with researchers from the University of Queensland to better understand what harmful content looks like in the Asia-Pacific region. Though Pacific countries won't be included as case studies, researcher Dr. Aim Simpang says the information will hold important insights for the region.
Facebook has recognized that they have failed to respond adequately to a rise of hate speech on their own platform.
Dr. Sipeng is concerned that Facebook does not have the local knowledge to spot violent posts spread by users in the Pacific. She says languages like Samoan, Tongan, Tokpisin, and others are not automatically recognized by Facebook, and hateful speech in the region can therefore be easily overlooked.
The key issue with the Pacific region that is unique is the issue of language. They're not even doing a good job at all in the Pacific region. Definitely not. They can't because they just don't have the right language databases.
The outcome of this lack of monitoring can be severe. A recent report in Radio New Zealand found that sorcery-related violence in PNG was being fueled by people sharing disturbing images on Facebook. And governments across the Pacific have repeatedly called for a Facebook ban to control fake news spreading on the platform. In a statement to Pacific Beat, a Facebook spokesperson said that it has recently strengthened its safety and security team and has dedicated staff to provide 24/7 global content review and moderation in more than 50 languages. And just last week, the Vanuatu government said it had met with Facebook representatives to help identify and delete fake accounts. Vanuatu's Prime Minister's spokesperson, Hilaire Boule, says the meeting was productive.
They have indicated that they will help Vanuatu to monitor the fake account, because in their rule, fake account is not allowed.
But there is concern that innocent Facebook users may be caught up in this crackdown on fake accounts. Matt Teoma is an administrator for some of Vanuatu's most popular Facebook groups, like Yumi Tok Tok Strait. He believes it's the job of administrators like him to monitor and delete accounts, not the government.
Some people are using these accounts at work and to express themselves and protect their privacy. They don't want people to know who they are.
Facebook says it will continue working with external experts, NGOs, and government officials with local or culturally specific knowledge to educate them on Facebook policy and also gain feedback. But Dr. Aim Simpang is concerned there is a worrying trend for some governments in the region to blame Facebook for their own political shortcomings.
Governments all across the world are now basically trying to blame Facebook for pretty much all the political problems. It's an easy political scapegoat for government to say it's Facebook's fault. it's Facebook's fault.
Despite this, she agrees that there needs to be better monitoring of Facebook, particularly considering its popularity in the region.
This is a cross-the-board issue, but I think it especially affects the Pacific region because it's often forgotten. And it is heavily dependent on one single social media platform, Facebook.
Dr. Aim Sepeng ending Priyanka Srinivasan's report. The Fiji government says the economy has never been in better shape, nicknaming conditions the Bainimarama boom. This evening it will hand down its budget, the first since Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama was returned to power after elections last year. But some Fijians say things aren't as rosy as the government is portraying, and there are concerns about the level of public debt, as Kelvin Anthony reports.
It's a significant day in Fiji's political calendar. After 9 years of economic growth, the government is keen to continue that good run as it hands down its budget. There are key themes, though, of what the everyday is keen to see from the government's economic plans.
I suffer from four rare diseases which are difficult to diagnose and treat in Fiji with the current systems as it is. I'm currently undergoing chemo. The things that can easily be done make the services better for the average citizen in Fiji, and I'm hoping to see the 2020 budget factor that.
The poor people who are earning in average wages, they're not able to afford all those prizes. Parents cannot afford the needs of the children. I wish in the budget that the cost of living should be low.
When you go to the hospitals, there's more patients and less healthcare professionals. As a young mother, I'm very concerned that the child protective services or social services for children isn't up to par with the needs we have.
The finance minister, Aya Said Kayum, is at the front and center of the budget. He's been reassuring Fijian people the economy is in good health. But the availability of public funds has been making headlines in local media, creating skepticism from some that the government is running out of money. Fiji has a Fijian $5 billion budget deficit, meaning the government has been spending more money than it's been earning. And according to one expert, this is a reason for concern.
For small island states like Fiji, such a large debt can have the impact of reducing fiscal stability, especially happen during and after shocks such as natural disasters.
Dr. Nilesh Gounder is a senior economist and a lecturer at the University of the South Pacific. He says the Fijian government needs to reassess how it uses public money. Dr. Gounder says, based on their research, Fiji's current debt levels could have a negative impact on its long-term economic growth.
We can't go on like this because government will have to borrow every year, which will add up to the stock of existing debt. It's important that government should implement a sincere medium to long-term plan to reduce debt accumulation.
But Mr. Sayed Kayum denies the criticism.
And I know a lot of people in Fiji have suddenly become experts in debt and talk about higher levels of debt in Fiji, etc. But they don't actually know the real figures. Our debt to GDP ratio is about 45.9%. Debt is not necessarily a bad thing as long as the debt is able to give you productive capacity.
Here's Dr. Gander again.
If we look at our key industries, in terms of agriculture, the economy has remained stagnant for a long time. We have also not seen manufacturing sector grow, and the tourism sector has sort of stagnated in the last few years. The economy is to grow and create more jobs. The government has to relook at policies to bring about reforms and policies which will rejuvenate these sectors. The government must continue with the strong emphasis on education, health, infrastructure, and other fundamentals that is necessary to keep growing our economy. However, more important than that is growing our economy in a sustainable way. This means that policies need to be implemented to raise productivity so that we can raise incomes across all income levels.
Economist Dr. Nilesh Gounder ending Kelvin Anthony's report. Still in Fiji, and the country's human rights record has scored poorly in a new global index that's been published today, though it's not alone in the region. The Human Rights Measurement Initiative points out there are concerning results too in Australia and New Zealand. Pacific Beat's Catherine Grau has been taking a look. Let's start with Fiji. How did it fare?
Not great, basically. In this report, they say that democratic freedoms are under attack in Fiji. It came up right near the bottom of the 19 countries that they've measured. It had a very low score of just 3.4 out of 10 for freedom of expression and opinion. So they say that means a lot of people don't feel like they can share their thoughts with others without any fear. And they actually point out too, particularly, that unions or union members are particularly at risk. And of course, only last month we did see that issue to do with unions in both the local and international media, with the fears that there were reports of government and police clampdowns on them and their activity. Other things they found was that women particularly also feel like they're not able to participate in government. That was one other human right they looked at, and also that they don't score so well for people's right to assemble and associate essentially in public, scoring just 3.7 out of 10. Anne-Marie Brooke is the co-founder and the development lead of the Human Rights Measurement Initiative, and I spoke with her about the results.
Fiji is a really important country in the Pacific, and they introduced a new constitution a few years ago. And so it is disappointing to see that the people of Fiji still lack the ability to fully express themselves politically and otherwise, particularly on the right to opinion and expression and also the right to participate in government, that Fiji performs particularly poorly, not all that differently from Venezuela, Vietnam, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And what our experts on the ground have told us is, you know, we've got information on which people are particularly at risk of having these rights violated. And some of the ones that come up are journalists, people with particular political affiliations or beliefs, human rights advocates, members of labor unions, people who protest, protesters or people who engage in, you know, peaceful political activity. So all of that is quite concerning, and definitely Fiji could be doing better. The right to freedom from torture and ill treatment is not one of the ones where Fiji performs the worst, but it is quite worrying. In particular, I can see that people are identifying police violence as being a problem. And the definition of torture and ill treatment includes things like police violence. And it is clear that on that, our experts have told us that, you know, every citizen is at risk of violence from the police, apart from publicly known people and politicians. So that is worrying.
As we heard there from Anne-Marie, there is some concern about police violence in Fiji. And of course, we have reported cases of police brutality here on Pacific Beat. Now, the police commissioner and government in Fiji have previously said they're investigating those sorts of cases and certainly do want to clear up their police force. And it's not all bad news, I should say. Anne-Marie Brooks says that there are some positives, particularly the right to education. They're finding there is a pretty good number of children who are going to school, for example, in Fiji.
Have any other countries come up in this report?
It's very mixed. The general trend is, though, that developed countries do better than developing, although the United States doesn't perform so well. And closer to home, both Australia and New Zealand did have much higher results, but it is minority groups in both those countries that they've identified as being at most risk. Here's Anne-Marie Brooke again.
In both New Zealand and Australia, it's really clear that Māori in New Zealand and Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders in Australia are really at significantly higher risk than other population subgroups of having a whole range of human rights violated.
So as she says, there are some rather bleak results, but basically she says actually the aim of this entire report is try to actually encourage change. Let's take a listen.
We are releasing this data because we want to encourage, you know, a race to the top. So we want to encourage governments to pay more attention to human rights, to look at where they can, you know, do things differently.
Anne-Marie Brooke, the co-founder of the Human Rights Measurement Initiative, and we were speaking to our reporter, Catherine Grau. The Vice President of Kiribati is understood to have been sacked, although there's been no official word from government. Gurabi Nenam is believed to have breached the government's travel policy by making an unscheduled trip to Indonesia. Richard Ewart has been talking to MP and former President Sir Jeremiah Tabwai, who says official word of Mr. Nenam's dismissal has not gone public yet. He claims the state radio station is too afraid to broadcast the news.
The practice here that if a minister wants to travel, then there is travel absence has to be approved by the president. What happened was that he, on his way back from somewhere in the Middle East, he stopped over in Indonesia. And people are asking, why Indonesia? Because our understanding is that the company that is doing now the work of the stadium is a company from Indonesia. So people are reading a lot into that. But as I said, the full story, we don't know yet. But it appears that one of the reasons was, why did he go to Indonesia?
I'm thinking, though, that if the company that is looking after the development of the sports stadium is Indonesian-based, it would make some sort of sense, wouldn't it? Because I thought that there was a bit of a hold-up in terms of the stadium being redeveloped.
Yes, I guess you're right, but that was not the intention of the trip. My understanding was the Indonesian was not on the trip initially. And we understand that based on what is circulating around, he may have changed his itinerary when he was in Sydney on the way out.
Has the vice president done anything like this before? Because people might argue that if this is his first offence, if I can put it that way, it's a little harsh to sack him.
No, it's not, because I think already there are suspicions of what he's been doing. You know, there are many questions that have been being asked by the public. And you know that the pressure for government to get a decision was a public pressure. Because everybody is saying on social media, on Facebook, that they feel there's something wrong. And that's why they asked government to do something about it. And one minister has come out on Facebook and said, yes, there is something wrong. And that's why, you know, the decision was taken.
So are you essentially saying that the president has bowed to public pressure over this matter?
Yes, and also there may be a strong case against the vice president.
You would anticipate that there may be more to come out about this particular matter?
Well, our understanding is that an investigation is being conducted now. We don't know what's going to come out of that investigation, but my understanding is that an investigation is being conducted to determine exactly what has happened.
And how would you see the dismissal of the vice president subject to confirmation impacting on the government? I mean, how damaging is this for the government?
It's very damaging because in the last hours we move a motion against vice minister who was involved in a car accident when he was on Christmas Island. And that the car, and what said is a car that he rented, and the expense was paid by government. And he was drunk at the time, had an accident. There are also stories going around now that are not good for the president. And the feeling that he has not taken a strong stand against some of his ministers.
Do you feel, therefore, that the president's own position now is under pressure?
Well, that's my reading. Because, you know, then we had a call from that day from Onoto, the island he comes from. And the people are saying that, I mean, they are supporting us in what we intend to do. And what we intend to do was to have a march as the president, to the office of the president, demanding that some action is taken against the vice president.
Former president of Kiribati, Sir Yeremiah Tabwai, talking to Richard Ewart. The Australian developers behind a massive resort and casino proposal in Solomon Islands' Western Province say it's already attracted the interests of international hotel chains. The 185-room development is still on the drawing board, but it's got the endorsement of the provincial government and the local community. But one tourism expert says social and environmental considerations have to be taken into account. Evan Wasuka with more.
Munda in Western Province is home to Solomon Island's second international airport, which began taking on international flights in April this year. Now developers Aurum Pacific are planning to build a world-class resort and casino and turn Munda into a Bali-like experience. The Laguna Grand Casino Resort is a $241 million project that will have up to 185 rooms and 16,000 square meters of gaming. The Western Provincial Government has provided its endorsement, giving the developers exclusive rights and 2 years to get the necessary regulatory approvals and secure financing. Provincial Secretary Jeffrey Wickham says it's the type of development that could transform the province.
If this investment does go ahead, it will set a very positive signal in as far as tourism, large-scale tourism investment in the Western Province.
Raymond Kasa is a member of the Kindu Council of Elders, who are the local landowners.
It is very important for us to have such investment like this in the area so as to bring in new money and also create employment for the people or for the young people here. In Munda.
Developers say already the project has attracted interest from the likes of the Marriott chain of hotels, among those keen to partner up. The project is a joint venture with Solomon Islands company West Invest Corporation and the private Australian company Aurum Pacific. Aurum Pacific owns 60% of West Invest Corporation. One of the directors of West Invest is Australian Scott Dodd, who is also a director for Australia Pacific Bauxite Limited. In 2017, Australia Pacific Bauxite was prospecting with the intention to mine in Temotu Province, but faced opposition from locals. This is a video of a protest on the island.
So Noipa, just do you need a prospecting or mining meeting at Noipa today?
No!
That's all.
But Mr. Wickham says the Western Provincial Government is not concerned with the investors' past history and other business interests.
Whether they are connected to any other investments or any other companies, that's not really an issue for us. But of course, we have to be tread carefully as to who the investors are.
He says the project has good intentions, but it's still early days yet, with the land for the project yet to be purchased.
We're still waiting for the company and the landowners to come back to the province and say that, look, we've sorted out everything and we are ready to start.
Joyce Conofilia is a tourism specialist and owner of Solomon Host. Ms. Conofilia says it's important that developers go through all the proper steps to ensure that social and environmental measures are covered.
I'm really hoping, seriously, that tourism authorities will really do their research properly on this development, just to make sure that, you know, our people are ready and also the development will not have a high negative impact on the lives of our local people, the environment.
Ms. Conofilia says there are benefits that the local community can look forward to, but it's not clear just exactly how much they'll gain.
I don't think they can just directly recruit from the local communities. They will definitely have to get qualified tourism graduates or people probably from Honiara. And so in terms of the direct, the communities, they can provide the food and maybe handicraft.
West Invest Corporation says the project is expected to start in the third or fourth quarter of 2020. But there's still plenty to be done before the project is off the ground. A major hurdle is that as the law stands in Solomon Islands, only two casinos can operate in the country, and there are already two in Honiara, and that can only be changed through the lawmakers in the capital.
Evan Wasuka reporting. And finally, it's been described as one of the ugliest periods in Australian sport, and now a film on Indigenous AFL star Adam Goods revisits the events and the national debate it prompted about racism. The documentary charts the Sydney Swans champions' final three seasons, which were marred by ongoing booing from fans and racist incidents. And those in the AFL and Indigenous community hope the film can educate Australians about racism in sport and also in the workplace. Gavin Coote reports.
Adam Goods has been booed for 17 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not good enough.
It was this wall of booing which started in the 2014 season that in many ways underscored a lengthy period of hostility towards the Sydney Swans player. Goods had been the target of serial booing from fans after calling out a crowd member for a racial slur. And it's this ongoing treatment that has now been thrust onto the big screen, with the film The Final Quarter, which pours over the events that led up to his eventual departure from the sport. Its director, Ian Darling, made a deliberate choice to wholly use archival footage, holding a mirror on a period he says the AFL wouldn't be proud of.
What we did as a nation is we came up with every single excuse we could as to why what was happening, you know, to Adam wasn't racially motivated.
Despite its searing depiction of Adam Goods' treatment, the film's been embraced by both the Code and its players. Paul Marsh is the CEO of the AFL Players Association and watched it along with Indigenous players ahead of its release.
That had a profound impact on them. So, you know, a lot of what's happened this year, particularly around the racial abuse on social media, the players have really stood up to call out that sort of behaviour. And we've actually seen a pretty significant slowing down of that type of behaviour in recent times.
Dr. Sean Gorman manages the Indigenous Players Alliance and led a review of the AFL's vilification laws. For him, the film dredged up feelings ranging from sadness to frustration.
It just was so surprising just how long it actually went for. So that was the thing that really struck home to me, that it went on week after week for a couple of years. But, you know, it's nothing to what Adam would have felt at the time and possibly continues to feel so.
The documentary will be eventually used in schools and sporting clubs, And for a film that's being talked about in both the arts and sports pages, its director Ian Darling sees it as a tool to address racism in the broader workplace.
In many ways, the film's sort of a metaphor for those difficult conversations that we often avoid having around the family dinner table. But sometimes you've got to be, you know, mature enough just to sit with that discomfort so you can move forward.
Film director Ian Darling ending Gavin Coote's report. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Pacific Beat. Catherine Grau will be back in the chair on Monday morning at 6 a.m. PNG time. Don't forget, you can find our top stories on our website. Just search for Pacific Beat and Radio Australia. Stay tuned on ABC Radio Australia, though, because Pacific Mornings is up next. I'm Liam Fox. Thanks for your company.